Thanks for tuning in to Conversations About Meaningful Things, the podcast where we dig into life, faith, and all the important questions. In a world that can feel isolating sometimes, we want to encourage you that you're not alone, that God loves you and isn't afraid of your questions. And that's the purpose of this podcast. In our time together, you can expect real talk, genuine interviews, and probably a few laughs along the way. Our hope is as you connect, you feel seen, loved, and encouraged as you take steps in your faith journey. So settle in and let's dive into the conversation. We're so happy to have you along.
Well, welcome back to Conversations About Meaningful Things. My name is Steve. We are glad that you have decided to jump in the conversation with us and look forward to not only a familiar face or voice as it may be, but also we've got a special guest today.
Yeah, and it's not me. This is Alex on the mic. It's good to see and hear everyone today. We've got our friend Mike Wagner on the microphone today. We're excited to have you in the studio, man. Yeah, Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, Alex, thank you. Steve, thank you. I'm super excited to be here. As you said, my name is Mike Wagner. I am married to my high school sweetheart, Melanie, and we've got four awesome kids ranging from 10 to 4 months old. So to say that we're busy would be an understatement.
Yeah,
Your hands are full, man.
Mike, I'm not sure I realized that she was your high school sweetheart.
Yes, Melanie and I have been together since she was 15 and I was 17.
Wow, man. You guys got quite the story, I imagine. That's awesome.
Yes, we did the long distance thing through college and then moved back here. I was telling Alex before we recorded, in high school lived a quarter mile from one another.
Wow. So did you just like saw each other across the gym or were you like, wait, we sat next to each other in chemistry or what? How'd that happen?
The first time I ever laid my eyes on her, she was walking with a friend past our house.
Oh.
So me and some buddies were hanging out outside and she walked past and caught my attention. And
that's amazing,
as high school boys will do, I found a way to get her phone number.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We've been together ever since.
And the rest is history, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, Mike, as I've, we've been friends for a number of years now. And one of the things that I've appreciated as we've had lots of conversations about meaningful things, actually. So fits right in. You know, some of the things we've talked about are how do we as individuals, as people, kind of figure out who we are, understand our worth as a person, or even our identity as a person. And I know that's been a major theme of your story. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it has for sure. And first, I want to say how appreciative I am of our friendship and the opportunities that we've had to have conversations like this one. And my story goes back far enough where I guess what I'll say is I've got a lot of experience trying to find my worth in the wrong places.
Mm-hmm. Which is not, I mean, let's be honest, it's not uncommon in this world we live in.
Absolutely.
Everyone's trying to figure that stuff out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think everybody's story is different, but there are some common themes, especially because of the society and the cultural influences that we are all subjected to. For me, it went back long enough that, just getting good grades was where I hinged my worth, right?
Right.
If the report card was filled with A's, then I was happy and good and confident. But
yeah.
if a B or even worse at times slipped in there, that became hard to handle.
Yeah. And let's be honest, for a lot of younger kids, like that's the first scoreboard, right, of life.
Yeah.
It's like, well, how did you do? What did you get? Is
yep.
that good enough?
Right.
Is it like, yeah?
What you get the dollar for every A on your report card?
Right.
And,
yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I did what I would say society told me to do. I went to school. I got good grades. I met a nice girl. We settled down. Got a good job. I went to college to be a physical therapist. So I spent 6 years getting three different degrees,
Wait, do I need to call you Dr. Mike?
You would have, but I gave up the license a while back.
Okay.
That's so good. We're okay.
Former Dr. Mike.
That's right.
Felt like I was dropping the ball there somehow.
No. The theme that emerged for me, and I'm somewhat of a slow learner, so it maybe took longer than I would have liked, but you know, the achievement, whether it was grades or a diploma or later on in my life, endurance feats, you know, marathons, triathlons, that sort of thing. The theme that emerged for me was the novelty of the most recent achievement always seemed to wear off faster than I wanted it to and faster than the last time, as if almost like a law of diminishing returns kind of thing.
So you had climbed the mountain and the view wasn't that great, mountain after mountain.
That's exactly right. And I want to make sure I'm clear to say that my experience, at least, was like the view was great, except it wasn't everything I thought it would be.
Right.
And that piece that it wasn't kept, that was the piece that I was really after each time, right? So when I, you know, found a good degree of success in my professional career and achieved a level of financial security that had previously eluded me, that was a great thing that freed up bandwidth, that allowed me to enjoy experiences and that sort of thing.
Sure.
But
and that's the thing our culture really points us to hard, right? That financial security, or, you know, how many zeros are in the account. That's our culture drives us in that direction.
Right. Well, once you get here, then everything will be all right.
Absolutely.
Right. And what I now, the way I describe this to my friends or my students, whoever's willing to listen to me chat about it, is, you know, finding that financial security is a good thing. There's value in it. But the highest value, at least for me, was in discovering what it wouldn't do for me.
Say that again.
Yeah.
Like that was...
Yeah, for sure. The highest value of achieving financial security or financial freedom, whichever it's going to be, is in discovering what it wouldn't do for me.
Because you were there, but still wanting.
Correct.
Yeah.
I would have described it as, you know, it was great, but something felt off, or I was happy to have the success, but I didn't feel fulfilled. There was just that missing puzzle piece for me.
Yeah. And that's in the midst of, from observation, you know, financial security, you mentioned, you know, success in terms of I've reached the goals. Like, it wasn't just, oh, I happened to buy the right lottery ticket. Like, you had set a plan in motion and you achieved the things you set out to do. Your family is growing and healthy, and those relationships are good. And so from the outside, everything looked right in the windows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But still there was something just felt off, you said.
Right. That's exactly right. And one of the ironic things for me was that the more what I'll describe as worldly success, right? With looking in the windows and having it all look good. The more of that I got, the harder I was on myself for the fact that it wasn't enough, right? I blamed myself for, well, if anybody has the right, or if anybody should be happy and satisfied, it should be you, Mike.
Right.
Because you've done this and this and this. The conclusion I came to was I just must be ungrateful and broken in a way that's beyond repair.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, sort of like you look in the mirror and what's your problem, man?
That's exactly right. And you know, when I didn't have some of the quote-unquote stuff that I have, the achievements or accolades or influence or whatever, I could point to those things and say, well, there's my salvation. If I just get that over there, then I'll be happy and healthy and everything. But as I accumulated those and they weren't the fix I needed them to be, ultimately I had to start to look inward and see what might really be missing.
Yeah. So is it fair to say in that journey that you realize that true happiness and fulfillment won't find its roots in external things? It's got to be something that is internal, places that no one necessarily sees just by looking.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And for me, I did like the, to use a football analogy, I called an audible, but it was like a fake because I went inward, but I went inward with like personal development and self-care. And again, I want to highlight, like, these are healthy, good things, or at least they have the potential to be.
Sure.
But for me, I wasn't doing them from a place of worthiness. I was still doing them to become worthy.
Yeah.
And so even like exercise and nutrition and diet, like taking care of me, the person, it wasn't the answer either.
Right. Let's be honest, you know, our physical bodies, you know, that's a losing battle, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, as much as we try and do all those healthy things, we know that, you know, no one gets out alive.
Right.
And so it's a losing battle. It's one that we try and extend as much as we can. But as some have said, a lot of people spend all of their time earning money, and then they spend all of their money trying to buy some more time.
Mm-hmm,
and
absolutely.
So that's like that vicious cycle.
Yeah.
And so, Mike, there was, you know, I know there's some things that you look back on in your past and in your journey that you say, these are some watershed moments that kind of set some wheels in motion for me and my thinking, how I defined some things for me. Can you just give us a little glimpse into some of those?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if I go, well, let's see, where do I take that question? It's a great one.
Well, I left it open-ended because I know you could go a few different places.
I could go lots of different ways.
Yeah.
You know, if we go all the way back, and I'm not going to turn this into a therapy session, but I was raised by a single mom. My father passed away when I was very young, about 7, and my mom has always been my hero, and she still is to this day.
Yeah.
And she was a single mom trying to raise 3 kids, not enough money, and
sure.
My childhood was pretty chaotic as a result.
Yeah.
And I was, in essence, raised maybe the better way. I was raised in many ways by a peer group.
Sure.
And then kind of made that transition from boyhood into manhood through an initiation of peers,
right,
rather than a real father.
Sure.
And as great as my mom was, she couldn't fill that role, and she was spread pretty darn thin.
Yeah.
So so I found myself learning how to survive and becoming really self-reliant very early.
Right.
Which are incredibly great skill sets, and just surviving is not really a recipe for fulfillment.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, you mentioned those are great skill sets. You mentioned, you know, financial success is not a bad thing, you know, but in the right proportion and in the right priority, right?
Mm.
Those are the kind of the two things that really are critical when we're putting this definition together of where's my worth, where's my identity. Proportion and priority are really important dynamics to that, which is kind of what you're hinting at, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing I talk about often now is it's not so much about what you do in many instances, but how you do it.
Yeah.
And if you do it, if I've found for myself, when I do it in an attempt to find my worth through these external things, I end up unsatisfied. Whereas if I do them from a place of self-love, which I extrapolate out to, you know, which was the thing that was in my way of a relationship with God.
Yeah.
And so as I learned to love myself, I learned to accept God, and then he reinforced, of course, where my true worth comes from.
Mm.
And so now the same things that used to lead me astray because I was approaching them from an unhealthy relationship, are now the very things that provide wellness and satisfaction and fulfillment and all those other things. It's not the what that changed, but the how.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, I think about some of my relationships with different people. I'll take my wife as an example. Like early on when we were dating, we're getting to know each other, right? There were certain things I did because I wanted to, in essence, like earn the relationship, right? I wanted to do that. But now I do things because it's an expression of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Those things can look exactly the same,
but
the all of the stuff behind the scenes that's going on in my head and my heart and relationally, completely different, right? And to me, that's always the way I've thought about when you describe that you know, what happens, I may be doing the same things. I may have the same results and achievements, but the impact and the reason why all that's happening is completely flipped on its head. And now once it's got flipped on its head, because we live in an upside down world, it's actually now right side up, and everything makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you, I'm curious too, Mike, because you've used the word worthiness a couple times in describing your journey, and you've already alluded there was a point in your life where you came to Christ, and that reality flip of, oh my goodness, everything that I've been doing to find fulfillment that just has left me empty. All of a sudden, there's this moment in life where I'm finding fulfillment because I'm not doing these things to become worthy, but from a place of being made worthy by God, I'm able to live and do these things. I'm just curious. I'd love to know, like, what was that? What did that moment look like for you? What was that? Like, have you grown up hearing about God, or was it a, hey, this just moment of impact? Like, what was that? Can you describe just that?
Yeah.
That moment for you?
For sure. And so I'll probably rewind a little bit to one of my first traumatic memories of a church experience was showing up to be confirmed at a Catholic church that my family attended mostly on Christmas and Easter.
Sure.
Right? we showed up for the confirmation class, and unbeknownst to us, my mom, again, spread very thin, brought me to the second class thinking that it was a one or the other
thing. Oh boy. No.
And no malicious intent that I imagine, I hope, from the woman, the nice woman behind the desk, but her exact words were, "You don't belong here."
Because you hadn't been in the previous class.
Correct. But well, that's, man. But I didn't I didn't put those pieces back together.
How old were you?
I don't even know, to be honest with you. How old are you when you're confirmed in the Catholic faith? Probably 12, 13, somewhere in there.
You're somewhere where you're still trying to figure out a lot of life.
Yeah. Yes.
And when you also, I think we talk a lot about how we tend to equate our idea or construct of who God is from our earliest formative years, especially with our parents. I can't imagine to go already not having a dad in your life.
Right.
Having an amazing mom who's doing the best she can, but all of a sudden your perspective of who God is, all of a sudden it's, oh, he doesn't want me here.
Right. Exactly. And it was very much tarnished by imperfect human interactions. And again, likely with no malicious intent, just it happened. So I share that to kind of set the context. So I responded to that by doing what I'd always done. I said, all right, well, I'll just make my own way through the world. And that's what I did. Fast forward, when my first son was born, William, that was when, witnessing his birth became for me an inflection point where it was like, okay, undeniably there is someone out there bigger than all of us making this magic happen, right? These miracles aren't just coincidence. Yeah. And over time I continued to do the work and kind of find my way, and I was making progress. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question directly, I accepted intellectually the idea that I was worthy long before I was able to embody that. Right. So I allowed Jesus into my brain and allowed him to tell me that my worth wasn't contingent on how many zeros were in my bank account or how many people I helped find, quit their job or find their own financial freedom, but was intrinsic and God-given. It took me several more years, and even present day, I have to remind myself sometimes that's a full body thing.
Absolutely.
It is. And I'm sure other people have heard this before. Maybe you guys have, but, it's been said that the longest spiritual journey is the 18 inches from our head to our hearts.
Mm. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. And it's true, right? Because we have this, I think, this subtle, like, kind of appeased feeling that I intellectually accept something. And so I guess I'm good. I guess I'm okay. Like, okay. I agree with the facts of the Bible. I guess that's right. So I'm good, right? But really, that life transformation, that turning upside down, that really understanding who I am as a child of the creator of all things, like that's a lot different. And in fact, the invitation of Jesus was never, hey, could you agree with my doctrinal statement, please?
Right? He did not care about that.
No. He said, come follow me and I'll make you. He talked about that life transformation. Mm-hmm. He'll give us that purpose and that leadership and all those things that we're all searching for, mm-hmm. ultimately.
Yeah.
You know, we want that. We want to know who we are.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah. When you talk about, you know, flipping the world on its head, the dramatic change for me when I finally made that 18-inch trek from my brain down into my heart was moving from, and I was completely oblivious to the fact that I had lived the first 35, 40 years of my life this way, but I was operating from a place of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that drove me to do as best I could, but I was always the peace, right, yeah. that they talk about that's beyond understanding.
Yeah. Right.
It was like, not only was that beyond my understanding, like I couldn't even point to it on a map. Like it was nowhere near me. But I didn't really know it because I had lived in that frazzled and truly in a biological sense, fight or flight mode for so long.
Yeah.
That when I felt the shift from being confused by the parts of the Bible that I didn't really understand to still intellectually, I can't wrap my head around it all, but I feel it and I know it to be true in literally every cell of my body. It's like, whoa, like this is what it means to live from love as opposed to fear.
Right.
And that was the somersault that I needed.
Right. And scripture talks about that. It says in 1 John that perfect love casts out all fear. Mm-hmm. And so those, you know, God's perfect love and fear are not meant to coexist, especially in the vessels we call ourselves and our brains and our hearts and our emotions and all that. Yeah. So they don't coexist together very well. And that's because, you know, God's love is greater than the fears we have.
Yeah. And that's, I think for me personally, and I don't know that this applies to everyone by any stretch, but working through the unprocessed fear and shame and guilt that I had from all of my wayward years was a critical element of it. Not that it necessarily has to be, but it just was for me because it allowed me to, one of the things that I used as a waypoint, and forgive me if this isn't biblically sound, but when Jesus said, follow me, one of the ways I interpret that is love the way I love, which is means without these conditions. Don't love yourself if you get the promotion. Don't love yourself if you make $1 million. Don't love yourself if, because that's conditional love, which is not what Jesus teaches us, right?
Yeah.
Well, so I think, you know, just to address your doctrinal concern, I think it was for those first century disciples, it was a literal follow me. Mm-hmm. Like, come on, I'm going to show you. You're going to be my apprentice. That's literally what a disciple means. But I think it also carries the connotation or the meaning directly that follow my example, like the things that I'm teaching, the things that I'm setting, you know, that you see, you know, follow that example as well. It wasn't just, you know, hey, I'm walking down the road to this next town. Come on, let's play follow the leader. It was way more than that, and I think you're accurate in that commentary. So,
yeah,
and that's one of the, I think you touched on there, one of the most profound changes for me has been my seeming ability to hold some contradictory things in each hand at the same time and know that they're not a contradiction, right? So like loving myself and yet dying to myself, right? Like those on the surface can be very confusing and contradictory. And now I see that dying to myself in favor of God is the greatest love that I can give myself. And so the apparent contradiction dissolves for me once I move from that fear-based operating system into the love-based operating system that he offers us.
Yeah. And fear is that I'm always worried about failure, rejection. Like there's so many things I have to earn and, you know, we're driven by that. And you said the love side of the equation, you know, the beauty is we don't earn anything from God, but because of his love for us, and not, you know, love like, oh, like a pity kind of love, like a genuine, I've adopted you as my children, that kind of love that I want to provide. And so that value is not earned by us. It's inherent because of relationship. And that's totally different, right? It's that's the unconditional part. Yeah. And you as a dad of four and Alex as a dad of three and I'm a dad of three, like we get that, right? Like I don't stop loving my kids if he, you know, comes home 10 minutes after curfew or whatever. And sometimes it's in those moments that I express my love very directly, like, hey, I've been worried about you, like what's going on, you know? And so, to see that equation find its right foundation in a love that we understand comes from God and is inherent in who we are, not based on what we've done or for that matter, not done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know we're in our final moments, and Mike, we're going to just have to have you on as like a normal guest because I feel like we've just scratched the surface on your story and what God's done in your life and in this conversation. But I'm just curious because you'd said that you have students. So are you a teacher? Is that?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah. So I started an education company to teach people how to use self-storage. We say how to use ordinary garages to create extraordinary lives.
That is awesome.
I'm actually transitioning out of that a little bit now and kind of zooming out and doing a little bit of more life coaching per se, generalized wellness, physical, emotional, psychological. And if we can hit those three bars, people usually find their way to a spiritual center. And so that's awesome. My next chapter.
Yeah, I love that.
The next chapter.
Yeah. The reason I asked too, because I just think it's so key, like as we're interacting with people, and obviously God's done some really amazing things in your life. I'm just curious if you were able to have a moment, a sit down with someone who's just wrestling with this. Again, we live in a culture that is so driven by results and workaholism. Also, anxiety is so high in our culture, and it's becoming a problem younger and younger. Like I have a youth ministry background, and it was heartbreaking the conversations I would have with sixth graders, the things that are on their mind and they're struggling with. I'm like, my gosh, I was, you know, I didn't even know what anxiety was in sixth grade. Talk to that person who's just really wrestling with their value, their worth, and maybe in a similar spot as you were, where it's like, what is wrong with me? I keep doing these things that I feel like I should be fulfilled. Why do I feel so empty? Talk to that person, encourage them. What would you say to them?
Yeah. So first and foremost, my first response is always to just shower them with love in whatever way I can.
Yeah.
And help them to understand that whatever they're doing is the best that they can in that moment, and that's something that they should, feel good about. Yeah. And you know, the best thing I know this isn't a great answer for a podcast, but as I'm envisioning myself sitting in front of somebody, in that instance would be to do my best to express non-judgment, the kind of love and grace and understanding that Jesus offers us. I would want to try to be a conduit so that they could experience what it looks like. Cause I think a lot of that anxiety and that worthlessness that at least that I felt was rooted in the fact, in my relationship to others and how I felt, the pressure to perform a certain way. And not sure that's a great answer, but awesome. I may take you up on the offer to come back and we'll dig into that one next time.
Yeah.
Love that.
Well, I don't know when it'll be, but I'd love to have you back and hang out. We are kind of running out of our time today, but I'm so glad that, Mike, you joined us, and those who are listening along with this conversation, that you've been a part of it as well. And just a quick reminder that we welcome your feedback, and if you want to send us an email, it's podcast@victorchurch.org.
And Mike, before we let you go, if somebody wants to connect with you or know more about you, what is a way that they can connect with you?
Yeah, probably the best way is via email. It's my full name, MichaelWilliamWagner@gmail.com.
Awesome. Don't spam them, but if you want to continue in this vein or, again, just get to know Mike and be encouraged, hit him up. I'm sure he'd love to have a conversation with you as
always.
Well. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Mike. It was awesome to have you on, and we're hoping, again, wherever you're at, wherever you're listening to this, you found some encouragement from our conversation today. We'll see you guys in the next one.